Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. My guest today started one day, 10 years ago, in the depths of despair, and before that day was done, was introduced to a path to her current life, where she lives in joy and alignment and authenticity. Ramona Gailey exudes joy and peace, and talking with her was a real pleasure for me, even as I had difficulty forming some of my questions coherently. She calls it unconditional love, and as you listen to her, you'll be channeling Estelle Reiner from When Harry Met Sally and be asserting, I want what she's having. Ramona is so substantively blissful that we are pulled into that energy too. She calls herself a vibrational mentor and does explain that phrase during our conversation. Listen now, you're going to enjoy her. I'm going to start the intro for today's guest with part of her opening note to me. My beloved life partner of 24 years, Betty, died in my arms. This loss left me totally at sea and about to follow her. I was convinced that my only source of unconditional love had just left the planet, and I saw absolutely no reason to stay. Well, fate intervened, and spoiler alert, the information I started learning that day literally saved my life, and it all worked out. That's pretty powerful, and I will admit, created both surprise and puzzlement in me. Ramona was starting over at the age of 55, and she needed help. Sadly, the support in finding the internal guidance that she desperately craved was not available. Not at any price. Those are also her words. I was interested, but I was more amazed that out of the depths of despair, a new direction, journey, destination was born. And seeing as how losing a life partner at this time of life is not unusual, I wanted her to share her story with you, my listeners. Ramona Gailey, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you, Agnes. I am so glad to be here, and I know we're going to have a great time.
Well, after the shenanigans that went on before I clicked record, I'm quite sure we'll do all right. Ramona, I'm not sure there's a statute of limitations on consolement. Is that a word? So I'm sorry about the passing of Betty. Would you share with us as much as you want to your life with Betty and how the loss of your cornerstone opened the door on who you are and what you do today?
Absolutely. Well, we were together for 24 years, and she was the absolute love of my life. And, you know, what I wanted was a family. And being gay that many years ago, it wasn't so commonplace for anyone to think that you actually could have a family. And so when I found her and we clicked so well, and we were like two children at play almost all the time for 24 years. She was 20 years my elder, and we never noticed the age difference. And so we just had a wonderful life. We went gallivanting all around the world and worked very hard closely together and played closely together and loved a lot of the same things. Music especially is how we met, through music. And so it was one of those idyllic lives, one of those idyllic relationships. People would frequently say to us, oh, you have such a wonderful relationship. I hope I can find someone and be as happy as you two. And so when she passed away, I didn't have any spiritual beliefs and I didn't have a God. I didn't have a church. I didn't have a belief of even where she had gone. You know, I mean, I was very bereft. I mean, it's hard for me to describe from where I am now how I felt then. I just felt lost, abandoned, and not even like, I mean, I was sad. Obviously, I was very sad. I was very upset, but it wasn't like I was depressed. You know, like it wasn't a call for help. I didn't tell anybody. I just literally, when you read my words back to me, you know, and it's been, you know, a minute since I've heard those words, since I wrote those words. And I think, yeah, it's really true. I saw no reason to stay. None. None. It would have been idiotic to stay. Like, why would you do that? And so I was preparing to leave and the phone rang and it was her best friend, Lordella. And Lordella said, you know, I was crying and I don't remember what I said, but I was talking about the rings that it's a long story, but we had lost these rings, these gold rings. And I was so upset about that stupid thing. And I was telling Lordella about the rings and she said, wait, you've got to stop thinking like that right now. And I said, yeah, well, maybe, but I don't know how. I feel like I'd been trying to control my thoughts, you know, for 55 years and had struck out, you know, thoroughly. And so she said, well, have you ever heard of Abraham Hicks? I said, no, what's that? And so she started telling me. And that day, it was like, you know, they talk about AD, BC and AD for Jesus, you know, like before the death and after the, that's where my life divides. That day, all leading up to that day was one life. And starting that day going forward was a completely different life. Just like night and day. And so that brought me to here. I was 55 then, I'm 65 now, and I live this amazing, amazing life of trust and faith and love, but not the same kind of love that she and I had together. But what she and I had together was very human and it was very beautiful, but it was conditional, you know, because we're conditional beings. And my love now is unconditional. And it's, my life is so full of joy and faith and trust and exhilaration and beauty and appreciation and all the things that I really was looking for and thought I had found to some extent with her. And I did, you know, compared to my previous life, but compared to now, I mean, there's just no comparison. So I don't even remember your question, but anyway, I hope I answered it. So that brings you up to today. I mean, that's like the whole shebang right there from start to finish. Here I am.
No, that sounds great. And it's interesting too, how, you know, I just call it the universe. You know, the universe intervenes when it needs to, apparently. It's pretty crazy.
Absolutely.
So there's a whole bunch of directions that I was going to say that we could go, but that I want to go. But in our correspondence, you talked about authenticity. Now, most midlife women have spent decades being what other people need or want them to be. They've been daughters, wives, mothers, friends, employees. Many of them have totally lost touch with their self. Now, I think I've heard you describe it as self-love. Can you expand on authenticity?
Yeah. So I love authenticity. I love the whole concept of it. I love talking about it. And the first thing I want to say is I want to make it really clear that when I talk about authenticity, I don't mean honesty. Some people assume I mean honesty. And I can tell you, I was the most honest person in the entire world. I was the most direct. Some people called me blunt. I would not pull any punches. I wouldn't lie about anything. I would be quiet if I needed to. I mean, I wasn't rude, but I was always honest. But I was not authentic because I was doing exactly as you just described. I was trying really hard to be good. I was trying really hard to be right, you know, to do what I was supposed to do, you know, which I thought was growth. I was very growth oriented and I was very service oriented, but not in an abundant way. It was in a sacrifice way. And so, you know, if somebody needed something, I would be there for them, you know, a friend, not just a stranger. I was very selective and, you know, who I hung out with because I didn't know how to protect. I needed to protect myself from others. And so from there to authenticity, which if I was going to give a definition, my definition for authenticity is the ability to be seen, the comfort and the ability and the actual joyfulness of being able to be seen for who we truly are, to stand in the face of anything, of disrespect, of suspicion, of questioning, and say, no, I'm who I am, and I love myself, and I know that I'm good, and I'm able to be seen because I'm confident in what you're going to see. So inauthenticity would be that bit of fear of not really being willing to look deep inside ourselves to find out what's there, for fear that what we find there isn't good enough. So authenticity is knowing that it is good enough, that I am good enough. The ultimate I am, just like you are, we are. And so in our authenticity, we can be who we truly are in any given moment, no matter what is going on, no matter what the opinions of the peanut gallery are, or the demands of the, you know, anybody around us, or the voices from the past, you know, who say, well, you should be doing this and you can't be doing that, and what will people think, and all those kind of, you know, the kind of whisperings, right? When you can stand there in that wind and just be who you are, nothing can knock you over. Nothing can bow you. And so that's what I mean by authenticity. And this is what I teach to my clients. This is what I serve as a role model. And Oprah, my entity, my inner being says, you know, be the beacon of light. As you stand and just be, you bring so much light to others who don't know how to, who are afraid to, who don't know even what it is, but they can feel it. And so in our each of our authenticity, we become the beacon of light for everyone around us, even people across the globe who don't even know we live. Our vibration influences and impacts on the world. And that's what we came for. That's what we came for, to be the beacon, to be joy, to be love, to be ourselves, our true selves.
I'm liking that. I've heard you talk about how women especially have had so much instruction on what they should be and do and what their lives should look like. A former mentor calls them rules, the bullshit rules. How do we disrobe?
That.
Yeah. How do we disrobe from the rules? It's easier said than done. We can recognize them, but climbing out from under.
It's actually really easy when you follow one rule. Do whatever it takes to feel good. It flies right into the face of all of that. It's only one rule. We only have to remember one rule. Do whatever it takes to feel good. And immediately people say, well, do you mean doing drugs and, you know, and beating up on people? That's awful. You know, no, that stuff doesn't feel good. When you're being who you truly are, and when you're truly, truly tapped into who you are, you're pure love. We are all pure love. The universe is made of pure love. And so when we do whatever it takes to feel good, sometimes that means letting people down around us who are demanding things of us. Sometimes it means walking away from circumstances or from situations or from even from people or from ideas, and being willing to let go of anything that doesn't feel good. It's almost an act of revolution. For a woman, especially, to stand there and say, no, I'm not going to do that, but thank you so much anyway. Drive some people crazy.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, that's hilarious, you know? The idea that we should do what they want, and it's selfish of us to do what we want, when really it's selfish of them to want us to do what they want. You know, it's so topsy-turvy, and it's such an endemic part of our culture. And yet it's easily broken once you find and commit and practice just a bit. I mean, there's a skill involved. The one rule is do whatever it takes to feel good. The skill is learn to discern what actually feels good, because it's not what we've been told our whole lives. You know, we've been told, depending on who we are, we've been told all sorts of fabrications
rules
about what it is that's supposed to feel good. Rules. Yeah, exactly. And, or even just when we stop loving our bodies, you know, around puberty, most girls start to hate their bodies, and most women never really recover from that. And so when you start learning to trust and love your body again, your body will tell you exactly what you want and exactly how you feel and exactly what's going to feel the best out of any two choices that you might be, two or more choices that you're facing. So when you learn to discern what actually feels good, now you're a powerhouse. Now you're free. Now you're just soaring above the clouds. And it's so easy. When you don't resist the old, you just let it fall away. And you stay right here in the present, and you do what feels good, and you trust your body, and your body gives you the guidance and the leadership that you need, that what we would call intuition. It's in your emotions, and it's in your body, physical sensations. And when you tap into that, and once you've felt unconditional love, once you've felt that in your body, in your cells, in your breath, there's no stopping you.
Ooh. I have to think about that one just in terms of it's still, I think, easier to say than to do. And do we have to find, I don't know whether the word is space or time, to really lean into whatever we're feeling and how we
Yes.
are reacting.
Yes. So alone time is essential. I spent a lot of alone time after Betty passed away. When I was learning this material, I spent a lot of alone time, and that's easier for an introvert than it is for an extrovert, I'm sure. I'm consider myself an ambivert, but I lean more towards introvert by a long shot. And so, yeah, time and space to really start feeling who we are. And I'll tell you what, that reference that you read of my writings that I couldn't find what I needed. I started my very first career was as a professional classical trumpet player. And I went to Peabody Conservatory, which is in the United States, and I was very accomplished. And every time I found anything that I didn't know how to do, that I was struggling with at all, I would find somebody who knew how to do it, and I'd go and take a private lesson. And then I would learn it, and I would practice it, and then I would have it. And so as soon as I started learning this material, the first thing I wanted was a mentor. And there wasn't one. The only thing I knew was Esther Hicks, and she only works with large groups. So I went to every workshop that I could. I went to seven of their cruises. I've probably been to 40 Abraham Hicks workshops. But it was so frustrating because I wanted somebody that I could call when I had a question. I wanted somebody that I could see on a regular basis. I wanted somebody that I could spend time with, that I could absorb their vibration. Because sometimes just sitting next to another trumpet player who was really good at something, I'd say, "Well, how do you do that?" And they would say, "Well, here, like this." And they would just play, right? And then I would feel it, and somehow I would be able to do it better because I was just there in their proximity. That's what I wanted for this new spiritual awakening that I was experiencing. And that's the primary reason why I do what I do, because now that I receive infinite intelligence the way Esther Hicks does, and people come to me, and here's what happens. You say that it seems like it would still be hard to make those changes that I'm talking about. And it is if you're thinking about it. But it's not when you're feeling about it. So when you come into the presence, the unfettered, unapologetic presence of pure love, which is what I call Oprah, which is my inner being. We all have an inner being. That's our connection to source or God or Mother Earth, whatever you want to call it. It's called different things by different cultures, but the all that is, the pure love of the universe. When you can actually feel that in your body, it changes everything. Everything else starts to fall away because there is a knowing. You're no longer trying to decide or strategizing it, or analyzing it, or weighing it, you feel it. When you feel it, it's a game changer. It's an absolute game changer. And it becomes not hard at all. Not work. There's no homework. It's you practice, and you have grace every time it doesn't go the way you think it should have. You just let it go again. You just let it go. You just let it go. You just let it go. And you let it go. And then you let it go. Then you let it go. You let it go. And pretty soon you're laughing uproariously. And there's just nothing can bring you down from that because it's a skill. It's not luck. It's not happenstance. It's not circumstance. It's not deserving. It's right there. The skill to feel. To remember how to feel pure love. Because we're born knowing. We know exactly what we want and how we feel when we're born. Pinch a little kid, they'll cry, they'll kick. No! We lose that. That's conditioned out of, especially for women. Sit down, shut up, be quiet, be seen and be not heard. Just be pretty. Don't be anything but pretty. All of that just falls away. It just falls away in the presence of unconditional love, which we all have. Every single person on the planet has it. And I can show you how to tap into it. I can help you feel it. You can feel it. You're not thinking about it anymore. You're feeling it. Big difference.
When you were talking about let it go and let it go and let it go and let it go, What it reminded me of is how some people, when they're trying to have you get to the answer, they ask why and why and why and why. But I think I really like your let it go, let it go, let it go.
Yeah. Why is a thinking question. It's a very upstream, out of alignment question. It always takes you away from the truth. So, yeah, let whys go and feel. Once you've done it even just a couple of times, this is not a new skill. We know this deep in our hearts, deep in our cells. We know this in the very marrow of our bones. We know this. And so it comes back very easily once we give ourselves a chance at all. Yeah.
Once we give ourselves a chance, is that the same as giving ourselves permission?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, doing whatever it takes to feel good is a decision point. You have to choose. I can't tell you how much blowback I get on that. Well, I can't do that. You know, what would people think? That doesn't sound moral. I would turn into some sort of a monster. I don't know who I really am, and I'm afraid to find out. That would be, it's an act of revolution. It is an act of revolution in our culture to just be who we are, to feel our real feelings, and to be unapologetic about it. To stand and say, I am, is pretty dramatic. Some people can't. They decide not to. But if you decide to, and that just means set an intention, it's nothing more than that. I say, okay, this is kind of scary, but I agree in principle, I should be allowed to feel and think any way I want. You know, I should be able to just be who I am. As scary as that feels, I hereby commit to that. That's all it takes. The love just flows in. It's been waiting. It's been waiting your whole life. It just flows in. So soothing and so beautiful. And so freeing. It's joyful. There's never anything wrong with it. You know, so many times we think, well, you know, I really, really, really want, and then fill in the blank. And it hurts to feel that way. It hurts to want. That's a real big misconception in our society. The desire always feels good. If it hurts, if it feels painful or scary or negative somehow, that's because of the thought we've attached to the feeling. They're two different things. So learning to just notice the difference between those two things and point towards the desire and point, you just point away from. You don't have to push it away. Anything unwanted, you don't have to push it away. You don't have to resist it. You just, like, if this is something unwanted, I just look away, just like that. And it falls away through lack of attention. Because whatever we focus on gets bigger. It gets more energy. That's why the war on drugs has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. The war on whatever, all the different things, all the different wars we've got going on, they all get bigger and bigger because we're so focused on resisting them that we're feeding them with energy. And so when you look away from anything unwanted and you look towards that beautiful divine desire, whatever it is, that desire is perfect and it always feels good. Desire always feels good. It's pure love. Our desires are driving the expansion of the universe. And so they are God-given. And it's kind of our job to come here and want things. When you start thinking about it that way, I'm telling you what, there is no limit. And there's no regret. There's no shame. There's no embarrassment. There's no anger. There's no grief. There's no loss. There's no lack. And I'm not saying I do it perfectly or anybody does it perfectly. We're on the physical plane. We're surrounded by this culture that we're in. But if you can do it even 60%, you're way ahead of the game. You will never look back. You will never look back.
Well, and I silenced a laugh right after I asked you that last question because I realized in asking I was overthinking.
So I'm working on a second book right now. It's on a little bit of a hiatus right now because with everything with the hurricane and everything, but my second book is called Stop Overthinking and It's All Overthinking. It's all overthinking.
Guilty
It's
as
all
charged.
overthinking. Me
Yeah.
too. Me too. It's a very easy habit to fall back into, but when we truly love ourselves, it doesn't matter. Oh, I was overthinking. Pfft, no big deal. I just go right back at just, it's almost like slipping back into the slipstream. The stream is always flowing. Pure love, pure practically euphoria is always flowing. And we can step out of that stream and then step right back into it. And it never is like, well, where have you been? Well, what did you do? No, it's just pure love. Like, come on in, the water's fine. You know, just like, let's just have fun. Let's just be this thing. Let's just do this thing. Let's just have fun. Let's have fun.
Okay. I've had complete strangers when I'm on a phone call getting information. Finally, this moment of silence, and then they just say, and they'll never meet me in their entire lives, and they just say, Agnes, you know you're overthinking this. And so that, I'm so guilty of that. Okay, what are personal assets?
Personal assets. Wow. Personal assets are what we have when we're born, our ability to feel, our ability to focus, our ability to desire. Those are our assets. They never go away. We can suppress them and pretend they went away because they're pesky little things in our society. They get us in trouble in school. I need to go to the bathroom. Well, you can't go to the bathroom. It's not time. Or you don't have a hall pass or whatever, right? Yet our body wants to go to the bathroom. So we learn to suppress how we really feel and what we really want. And so, but those assets don't go anywhere. Those are skills and those are assets that humans, you know, the beasts of the planet, as Abraham calls them, the animals, they are really good at allowing. They are not so good at summoning. Like standing here and saying, wow, I really want that thing over there that doesn't exist yet. That's what I call summoning. That's what humans excel at, summoning. And that's an asset. And guess what? You can't stop desiring and asking for more things, whether you pretend you have or not. We never stop asking for more. And so as soon as we have one thing, we want the next thing. When we have the next thing, we want the thing after that. Or we want that thing way over there. Or we want that thing that we passed a while back and we skipped. We want. And that's beautiful. And that's one of our assets. One of our biggest assets that we've got. And it defines where we're going. And whether we go with it or not defines on how defines or decides whether we enjoy the trip or not. But either way, we're going there. We can't help but have desires. You stub your toe, you want to be pain-free. Like, you're hungry, you want food. Like, everything that happens to us on this physical plane creates desires. And when you accept that and embrace it, and consider the divinity of it, the sacredness of it, and really fully allow it and act on it. Oh, it's so beautiful. Now, it, you know, like the airlines say, put your oxygen mask on first and then help anybody else who needs it. Because if you're unconscious, of course, you can't help anybody. So it's a really basic thing, right? Physically. But it's true spiritually. When I take care of myself and I make sure that I am living in pure love, just pure love, as pure as I can get it, as much as and as often as I can, then I am become a more and more of an asset to others. But I use my personal assets first for me, and then I can turn around and help others. So that's our personal assets, those inner beings of who and what we are as humans. Are assets that every single person on the planet has. I don't care how many arms or legs you've got or what education you've got or what color or gender you are. None of that matters. Love matters. Love is very powerful. Tap into it, feel it, then spread it around a little bit and see what happens.
So I do have a follow-up here, but you remind me of, and it's a line from a Barbra Streisand song that I use relatively regularly. It's like, I don't want much, I just want more. You know, so.
Yes, I love it. I didn't know that line, but I love it. I don't want much, I just want more. I love it.
Okay, so I think I got this off your website. You help people find their purpose and reclaim their brilliance to leverage their personal assets into success, even if they think they don't have any personal assets. You've told us about personal assets. Now define success.
Success is feeling good. Success is being who we truly are. Success is allowing ourselves to not only absorb, consciously absorb, and then emanate, almost be like a conduit of love, but to actually invite love, to appreciate love, to love and appreciate everything around us. When we start doing that, there's no form of abundance that cannot come to us. There's no form of mutual love and respect among, in relationships that cannot come to us. There's no amount of anything that we could want, anything that we want in this world, that however anybody would define success, whether it's money or status or comfort or whatever it would be, there's no amount of success that cannot come to us when we are emanating and matching what it is that we want. So if I look at, off into the future and I say, oh, I'd really love to have such and such. And if I don't allow any entanglements, which is very easy to discern, once you start feeling pure love, it's very easy to decide, okay, that I want this thing, but I can tell I've got this thought that says, I can't have that. That's too expensive. Or I shouldn't want that because it's kind of gaudy or, kind of show-offy. What will people think? Those things is what we call entanglements. And so as I allow that entanglement to fall away and I just let it fall away and I look right back at my desire, now that's success because I start to match that desire and I start to feel it in my heart and I start to feel my body become it. I can feel my vibrational becoming of it and I can feel the vibrational becoming of my desire and I can feel it actually calling to me, summoning me, sending me the resources that I need in order to have that thing. And when I answer that call, that's success because it's taking me to exactly what I want. Not what my parents thought I should do or be or have, not what my teachers said that most people are, not what the neighbors all think I am, not what my friends try to, coerce me into being. Like none of that. It's what I want. When I accept that what I want is divine, there's nothing can stand in my way. There's nothing I can't have. I can define success any way I want from there. It's pure love. It doesn't matter what flavor it is, whether it's grape or strawberry or lemon, it's success is love. It's everything that we've ever wanted. And it takes the human form. I'm not saying we're just sitting on the top of a mountain going, oh, and feeling good. It's a new car. It's a new job. It's purpose in life. Generally, it's real purpose in life, knowing what we're here to be and to do. And I don't mean like in a career. I mean like how we really meant to come to be that beacon of light for others, to uplift and to be uplifted, to participate on this much higher level than most of us, ever really achieve. More than just, we most of us have had little spots all through our lives where, we were in the zone or everybody came together and it was perfect or a small team accomplished this amazing thing, like if you're in sports or whatever, all of those are forms of success. And but we usually just have little spots here and there. But my goal is to show everybody how we can have that over and 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 over forever. All of it. One right after the other. Just beautifully success. Yeah, it feels good.
So I wanted to ask you about the word but is with one T. Is that an entanglement?
Sure. Well, it's a clue. It's a symptom. It's a high. It's a clue. Oh, I've got an entanglement going on. I want this thing, but I need to go doing such and such. But I've been feeling this. But I think, but every one of those buts is an entanglement. Every single one of them. Yeah. And isn't it beautiful that language gives us signposts? You know, when I find myself saying I should, or he should have, or he shouldn't have, that's an entanglement. But's a big entanglement. If you just change your language, I'm not saying that this will totally change your vibration, but it'll give you a clue. When you just start being mindful of your own language and you find yourself saying should or but or words like that, you can stop and just check in and say, no, I do want to go to the store and there is no but. I'm just going to go to the store because I feel led to right now. And so I'm going to go. And I don't need an explanation. I don't need a reason. I don't need, you know, to argue with anybody about it. When I feel something and then I act on it and then I get empirical feedback. Oh, was that an impulse? Was that an inspiration? Was that a craving? Was that a triggered response? Like, and how did it feel? And when I let go of all the thought and I just really focus on how it feels, I learn very quickly. How to discern what it is that I actually want, that what actually feels good. And then I don't really need the language cues anymore. The language doesn't happen anymore. You know, I'm not trying to control my language, just like I'm not trying to control my emotions. I'm cluing in on it. I'm using it like a mirror to show me, oh, I see. Okay, I've been focusing here and I really want to focus there. Or, oh, I've been thinking this and I really need to step back into my body and feel it, let go of all that stuff. So it's an indicator is all it is, really, the but. It's a good one.
How about if we bring someone else into the conversation in terms of my friend says, oh, I tried on this fabulous outfit and I felt so good in it. And I can't. But then I turn around and say, oh, yeah, you should. Can you clarify that for me? Because it's like,
well,
you're not shitting
on
yourself.
On what you mean, right? You're shitting on somebody else. Hey, I love that shitting. Yeah, so it really just depends on what you mean. But if you're really clear about your own vibration, you probably wouldn't say it that way. You would say, I love you in that color. You look magnificent. I love the way it feels. I love the way it feels to even just look at you wearing that. I love the joy on your face. Did you see that in the mirror? You would be actually responding in the moment rather than using that particular word. There's nothing wrong with the word. You might say it like that, but you wouldn't mean it like, oh, you really should do that. Yeah. It would just be a leftover, you know, remnant of speech. But if you're focusing on what actually feels good in the moment, you wouldn't be thinking about whether somebody should or shouldn't, you know, wear a certain thing or not wear a certain thing. You'd be focusing on how they seem to feel when they wear it, how you feel when you see them wearing it. Like, oh, my heart just dissolves when I see you in that. I'm in a puddle here. It's so soothing and so loving and so present. And so it reminds me of wildflowers and it reminds me of eagles soaring in the sky or whatever it is. You'd be right here right now talking about it. You wouldn't be off like, oh, but tomorrow night you're going to need it or let's wait till it's on sale or all of these thoughts. They're just thoughts, you know? Yeah, thinking. Exactly.
Exactly. So you're shooting in the dance, not with a finger shake. Okay.
There you go.
You've done some name dropping, and now I'm going to ask you, who is Oprah?
Oprah is my inner being. So if you're familiar with Esther Hicks, Esther receives Abraham on behalf of others. People come up on stage and ask Esther questions while she goes into a light trance and she receives Abraham and Abraham answers questions. And so when I had been listening to Esther for about 5 years, and then there was a moment where all of a sudden I realized I was going to be doing a similar thing. And so my inner being came forth and announced that their name was Oprah. And I said, there's no way in heck I'm going to tell anybody I'm receiving like Oprah Winfrey, right? They said, no, it's not Oprah Winfrey. And I said, can I spell it any way I want? They said, yeah. So that's what Oprah is. O-P-R-A, Oprah. And it's the name that they chose for themselves. It's based on a joke. And I go into a light trance. People start asking me questions. And Oprah gives me the answer that then I have to translate into words. So they are truly of the non-physical. They don't have words. So they send me information whether it's sometimes it's visual, but it's mostly it's just kind of a knowing. And then I figure out how to put that into words and I say it back to the people. But sometimes a client will say, oh my gosh, that's straight out of my childhood, or, you know, something that I will have said. How did you know that? And Oprah always answers the same way. Your inner being told us. We told Ramona. Ramona figured out how to put it into words and then told you, which for us humans, we're so verbal and we're so smart and we're so caught up in our thinking. It's so much easier for us to hear words coming from another human than it is for us to go inside ourselves and go into a meditative, contemplative state and then ask our question and then receive the answer and understand the answer and come out of that and go act on it. It's much easier for me to ask you as a human, well, should I do this? Or how am I feeling about that? Or, you know, whatever the question is. And so when Oprah can give them that information that they're seeking, and they don't give any more than what the person has verbally asked for. I mean, there's some data downloads going on sometimes, but it's always what's requested. So Oprah can sense the clients, you know, maybe summoning this way and that way and this way and confused about this and upset about that, but in alignment here and in alignment. And so they sense all of that, but they only answer the question that's asked because that's all the person's ready for in that moment. So they don't just spew, you know, the secrets of the universe all the time. They answer humans' specific questions. And it's extremely helpful because you can feel the unconditional love coming from them the whole time too, which makes it a lot easier to hear the answer. So, you know, usually the answer is something that we already kind of know, but we've been resisting out of fear or whatever reason. So when you hear Oprah say it to you in pure love, you can go, oh, yes, okay, I totally get that. I totally get it. So that's who Oprah is. It's just, it's my inner being. It's my connection to source, God, you know, infinite intelligence, all that is, Mother Earth, Father Sky. You know, every culture has a different name for it, but it is pure love, and it's my inner being. And that's their name.
I was going to ask if you found her or she found you, but it sounds if it's your inner being, you found her.
I've always had Oprah. We all of us have an inner being. That's basically our connection between our physical self and our non-physical self. It's our connection to source. It's where our intuition comes from. It's where our guidance comes from. And most people don't name that part of themselves. You know, it's just, and the only reason that my inner being got named was so that other humans could talk to them. We call them a them.
Well, and that's actually, I got notes here. And I said when Oprah, because I've heard you, I watched a video, when Oprah speaks of her reality place, and I don't know what to call it, she uses the we pronoun, and you call her they. And I was going to ask if it was plural or genderless.
Yeah, plural, not genderless. Well, yes, genderless also, because they're non-physical, but that's a direct reference to the plurality of them. And what happens is, anytime a client is summoning, I feel Oprah respond to the summoning. The way Ramona the human, I don't feel it. I'm not sensitive enough to feel it. But when I'm in direct connection with someone and I've brought in Oprah, and then they want to know, for example, early on, I had several clients that would start talking and then get, you know, kind of overwhelmed, emotionally verklempt, and say, well, what I really want is to feel loved. My mother didn't love me, and I've never felt love. I just want to feel loved. I want to feel lovable, you know, some version of that. And so Oprah would flood them with love. Well, Oprah can't do that on their own. They're out there, you know, they're not physical. So they had to do it through me. Well, so I would be like, like having trouble breathing, you know, and trembling and crying. And, you know, because I had never felt that much love before either, you know, so my vessel gets bigger and bigger and bigger every time I serve as the conduit for all of this just tremendous amounts of love. And I've changed quite a bit over the last 5 years as a direct result. So that plurality means that when that person is summoning, whatever they're summoning, Oprah answers. So that means all of God, all that is, the entire universe answers, comes together, and then comes through and answers the question. And so is that 5? Is that 10? Is that 1,000? Is that 1,000,000? You know, there's no way to measure it. There's no, because there is no separation, so there's no difference between different, you know, so-called entities or personalities or thought processes or beings or, you know, however you want to call that. There is no separation. So how many are there? There's more than one. That's all I can say, you know, and I don't have any sense. I get the sense of Oprah kind of getting bigger and smaller, you know, kind of breathing itself, you know, themselves in terms of their, how much is responding to it, you know. So the stronger the summoning, the stronger the answering, and the stronger the answering, the more presence I feel. But how many? I don't know. It's just, I know that it's plural. And they speak of themselves in the plural, as Abraham does. Abraham refers to themselves in the plural, and Esther refers to Abraham as plural. So I think it's, I mean, I don't even know. I don't know too many other people who do this, or I don't follow other, you know, people who receive infinite intelligence. So I don't know what everybody else is doing, but that's what I'm doing, you know, and that's what Oprah's doing. And Oprah's definitely plural, but not in the way we think of it. Like, you know, discrete chunks all gathered together. It's a totality of some sort. Yeah.
I warned you before we started that I might have a question that you don't want to answer, but I think it's just become moot because I've not been in touch with my spiritual guide that I know of, but I do know that I have a guardian angel. So because I associate my guardian angel as an entity outside of me, I was going to ask if there was any correlation between Oprah and Betty, thinking that, you know, like in that spirit place, self, world, whatever the word is, was this Betty's way of taking care of you? But it sounds like it's something deep within yourself.
Yeah, I'm not saying this very well, and it's so much bigger. No, I think you're, I understand exactly what you're saying. So I think it's just bigger than Betty or any one personality. I'm sure that Betty is part of Oprah. I mean, I feel that essence. I mean, Betty will probably, you know, always kind of represent some aspect of unconditional love. And so as long as I'm feeling unconditional love, Betty's a part of it. But I don't seek her as a separate entity or try to talk to her or, you know, connect with her in that way. I did at first, you know, before I started receiving Oprah, I was always looking for Betty. And I have a photograph of her that I've put on my wall just, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago for the first time for, you know, quite a while. And I feel such joy when I look at that photo, but it's really just purely a memory of when the photo was taken and how much fun we were having and all of that. It's not an attempt to connect with her now because she's not there now. She's part of Oprah. She's part of all that is and extremely happy and just pure love. It, just as both of my parents are, both my parents are deceased. My best friend, Roberta from California, she's in there. My very first girlfriend, Barbara, she's in there. They're all in there. And so much more, you know, whether they're ancestors or people that I never knew existed or not people, or I don't know what all it is, but I know that it's pure love and I know that it's pure good. And so, yeah. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but I tried to.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it was one of those random sort of mishmash, I guess. What is blissipline?
Yeah. Ah, yes. Yeah, so blissipline is the commitment to focus only on that which feels good. That's all that means. So instead of discipline, which is, of course, forcing yourself to do things you don't really want to, you know, to prove something or to gain something or to satisfy somebody else. Instead, blissipline is the art of focusing only on that which feels good. Just like you would focus a camera, you would choose your subject, you'd get it in a certain focus, and you'd take the picture. So we can do the same things with our focus, only we're encouraged not to. So it's a skill that I teach. How to focus on this instead of that. Why would you focus on this instead of that? Because this feels better. That's the sole criteria. It goes along with do whatever it takes to feel good. I've got two options of things to look at, or I've got 10 options of things to look at, to focus on. I'm going to choose the one that feels the best. I'm not going to watch the news. I'm not going to participate in a political discussion. I'm not going to sit around and complain or criticize people, because none of those things feel good. So when I focus only on that which feels good, I mean love. I mean joy. I mean successful expansion, whatever that means to us. It means contribution. It means purpose. It means mission. It means just sitting around being lazy one day and just taking it easy. You know, it means whatever it means, but the commitment to focus only on that which feels good goes along with that one rule: do whatever it takes to feel good. And I highly recommend it. If you haven't tried Blissipline yet, I highly recommend that you at least experiment with it a little bit. It's so much better. It feels really good and you get great results. Great results.
Well, I'll be pleased to say that I do have my moments of Blissipline, so that's great.
Good.
Yay! Okay, my last question. What are pitfalls at the peak? See, I'm just pulling things off of your, like, your website and your profile and stuff.
You've been a busy girl. So pitfalls at the peak is a presentation that I do and I guess you'd call it an ebook that I put together. So when we start down this spiritual path, when any of us have like a spiritual awakening, and we say, oh, this old way just hasn't been feeling good. It's been feeling worse and worse and worse. And all of a sudden I've had this spiritual revelation of some sort. Maybe I've started meditating. Maybe I've started doing yoga, whatever it is. And we start feeling better. As soon as we start putting our focus towards things that feel good, we start to feel better. We start to relax. We start to lose the anxiety and the worry. And we start to say, wow, what a beautiful world I live in. And I might start practicing appreciation. I might start telling vortex stories. I'm hanging out with other like-minded people. Things get better. And then, typically, not for everybody, but typically, and certainly for me, typically, we kind of start to go, okay, I was on this trajectory. Everything was getting better and better and better. And now what? I feel like I'm stalled. I feel like I've hit a glass ceiling. I feel like I'm blocked by something. I almost feel like I'm going backwards now. I knew all this stuff and I felt great. And now I'm starting to lose it. We most of us go through some form of that. And so I call that pitfalls at the peak, because we've reached this glorious peak in our lives and we're going, wow, I can see so much farther and the sun is so bright here and the wind is just perfect and the smells. But I want to be over there. I want to be at that peak or whatever, right? So we get to this level of frustration that says, I want so much more than this and I don't know how to get it. And the tools that got me from where I was to here don't seem to work anymore. A simple meditation just doesn't enliven me the way it used to. You know, going down to volunteer used to feel really good, and it just doesn't anymore. But I keep trying it because that worked. So it's all about, there's a whole nother set of skills, a whole nother perspective. And the main skill is to not hold on to the previous process or technique or habit that we developed that got us from there to here, because the universe is always expanding. You're always expanding. I'm always expanding. Everybody around me is expanding. So every time we try to glom onto, like, okay, this is what works. This is it. This is it. I've got 1, 2, 3. I've got a recipe. I'm going to put it on a card and laminate it and put it in my pocket. And from now on, that's what I'll do. But you've expanded beyond that. The universe is moving on, and you're moving on with it. And so the old no longer suits. The new is similar to the old, but it's different. And so from this peak, as we face what we fear, which is that we can't go any further, and we want more than we've ever wanted before in our lives, and we're afraid we can't have it, right at that moment, that is where a lot of my clients come in, right in that moment right there, because I've done this much on my own, And now what? Because I, from here, I don't know where to go, because I've got all the Abraham techniques. I've got, you know, meditation. I've got the vortex stories. I've got the placemat process. I've got the, you know, whatever. I've got all this stuff. I know how to do it. I felt a lot better. Things were going well. And now I don't know what the heck. I don't get it. So that's where there's a whole set of kind of, they're not really different skills. They're just kind of a different application of the same skills, really. But that's why I call pitfalls at the peak. This, you're trying to do the old skills that are new, the new old skills, the old new skills, however you say that, the skills that I just learned that work so well, but now don't seem to work. They just need a little bit of a refinement, a little bit of a reframe, and a lot of unconditional love. So, yeah, that's how you get from that peak to the next peak, and the next, and the next, and the next.
I love the way you threw in a couple more phrases there, but we could be here for 2 hours, but I won't do that.
I got the time.
I've rambled around a bit. We've rambled, or at least I've asked you to ramble, put it that way. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about, to remember? Oh, I used that think word, I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's okay. That's okay. Because, I mean, we have brains. They're beautiful brains. They're magnificent brains. There's no reason not to use our brains. It's just that the brains aren't rightly in charge. We tend to try to think that our brains are in charge. Our brains are here to protect us. Our brains only know the past. So that's why there's all that negative thinking that all of us are typically subjected to, that we start to realize, oh my gosh, I'm just so, I don't seem to be able to break out of this negative thing that I'm in. And so our hearts are connected to God. Our hearts know the future. They know without words what the future holds and where our guidance is taking us. And our guidance knows exactly how to get us through this generally, typically circuitous route to exactly what we want. Our brains are going to want to say, I want to go a linear, you know, job just from right here to right there, based on everything that I know from the past. So that's the only thing about the brain. They have their place, but we tend to put them above the heart, and really it should be the other way around. The brain really is in a protective stance to protect us, and that's lower, subjective to the guidance, right? So if you're an older woman, and by older I mean just mature enough to really start to be, you know, and that happens for us at different ages, right? Anywhere from probably 35 to, for me, it was 55. But so, you know, wherever we are in our life, and we're starting to think, you know what, there's got to be more to it than this. Or, oh boy, what I'm doing these days just isn't working. I'm not sure where to go from there. The thing that I would say to anybody in that place right now is start now. Don't wait. Don't wait. Start right now. Right now, you can take two deep breaths. Will bring you right into your body, right here, right now, and feel the tingling, feel the presence, feel the emanation. This is who you really are. And when you do this and start right now, and just set an intention, I'm going to start focusing more on doing what actually feels good to me. Whatever that means for me, whenever I can, without beating up on myself if I find, you know, myself not doing it, just right here, right now, I'm going to start. And you will be astonished at how much better you feel very quickly if you will just commit and do that right now. That's my message for your audience. Start now. Don't give up. Keep after it. Start now.
Cool. You are a vibrational mentor. What is that?
That is a title that Oprah and I made up together, and it is, nobody's ever used it before, which is why you've never heard of it before, but vibrational because I teach vibration. I practice my vibration. I'm aware of my vibration. I walk the talk on vibration, and by vibration, I just mean how do I feel. So the higher the vibration, the better I feel. And so, and Abraham put together an emotional, like, kind of scale that shows, you know, grief and shame and depression are way down low, and joy and euphoria and happiness are all very high. And so there's a kind of a hierarchy. And so I teach people how to raise their own vibrations. I remind them. They don't actually teach them. I remind them how to raise their own vibration without any conditions. Just, how can I just be happy now? I mean, my house is burning down around me, or, you know, like this hurricane that we've just had. I've just lost my house in a flood. How do I be happy in this moment? Everybody tells me I shouldn't be happy right now, but I can if I choose to be. So if I know how to control my own vibration, then I can control how good I feel. And that's really all we want, is to feel good, regardless of what we think will make us feel good, whether it's a food or drink or smoking or gambling or whatever it is. Like, we think we're going to feel better when we have it or when we do it. So that's vibration. So, and I'm a mentor much more than a teacher. I don't like stand at the blackboard and, you know, and give a curriculum, and there's no recipe card for this. It's all in the moment. So I'm not a teacher, and I'm not really even a coach. I consider myself a mentor, because a mentor mostly demonstrates, mostly role models and guides, just a little bit of fine tuning here and there. Oh, did you notice how that felt when you'd said this? What if you reframe that to be that? Oh, that feels so much better. Great. Okay, now we're off to the races. So vibrational mentor really fully describes what I do for others, you know, what my role is when I take on a client. I am their vibrational mentor. Just reminding, not teaching.
All right. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Oh my gosh, RamonaGailey.com. That's my website. And from there, you can find my social media. I do Facebook and YouTube. I don't do a lot with like Instagram and Twitter and all that. And but you can go through the Contact Us page. If you really want to talk to me, sign up for a free call. I have openings right now in my Alignment Circle, which is the small group session that where Oprah and I work with people. It's a VIP masterclass. It's incredibly transformative. It's a 4-month program, and you can go to RamonaGailey.com/the Alignment Circle with hyphens, but you can just find it. Just go to RamonaGailey.com. Oh, and I've got a special present for you guys, for your audience. Go to the very bottom, scroll down on the homepage, RamonaGailey.com. Scroll down. There's a little button down there that says private. Click on that button and it'll take you to my private podcast. I have an unpublished podcast. Do you see it? Are you on my homepage right now?
No, but I did see it on your Podmatch profile. So I'm on your website.
Okay, yeah, on my website. So if you scroll all the way down to the bottom of that website, you'll see a little private button. I think it's even gray. It's like, this is what it's like. Okay, this is it. This is so cool and fun. You click on it. It's like when you knock on the door of a speakeasy and they open the door and you say, Joe sent me, or you have whatever the password is, you know, nobody knows. Okay, you're in. So once you get in there, you can partake of wonderful little series, which I add to periodically, of discussions with just general lay people who come in and ask questions, and each one topic per session, and we talk and we laugh, and invariably I come up with some interesting answers that nobody ever expected on a perfectly mundane question. And so we just have a great time, and it's just private. It's not published anywhere, so that's just for your audience members of course to partake of. But I would love to, anybody who thinks they might be interested in working with me, I'd love to see them in the Alignment Circle. You have to talk to me first. You know, it's an application. But yeah, that's how you find me, RamonaGailey.com.
Okay. And now, what about your book? Tell us about your book.
Oh my gosh. The one that's out is called From Lonely to Fearless. And that is designed to help anybody who's struggling with anything. Lonely is a bit of a placeholder. I talk about loneliness and what it actually is, as opposed to the myths of what people think it is. And people, you know, so often will say, oh, just, you know, join a group or join a church or something, you'll feel better. That's not it. Loneliness is a disconnection with ourselves. as is addiction, you know, probably any misery description of a human condition. It's a disconnect with ourselves. So it is chock full of case studies and simple exercises on how to get reconnected with yourself. And so I think it's a wonderful guide for anybody who's looking for some practical suggestions and encouragement and inspiration for moving into the next phase of your life, which is glorious. It's absolutely glorious. Just beyond your wildest imagination, just glorious.
You just exude this. It's fabulous. Before we close, can I ask you a personal question?
Go for it.
You've had a variety of experiences. Yes, I just used air quotes. Trumpet player, did you say? Lab technician, yes. Stockbroker, systems analyst, construction estimator, real estate investor, and nonprofit leader. Did any of those bring you joy even remotely close to what you live now?
It's kind of hard to compare. My love of music was complete. It was all-consuming, but it was very entangled. What I can see, from my position now, I would say there was a lot of entanglement. There was a lot of striving and wanting things that I didn't think I could have, and trying to prove myself and trying to avoid having any kind of a 9-to-5 job, which is a big part of becoming a musician. I knew I didn't want to work in an office somewhere. So, but yet I loved it. I was very, very, very consumed by it. And when I lost that particular vocation, I definitely drifted for quite a while, really until I started this work. So everything that I did kind of in between there was not nearly as satisfying. It was all kind of a level of experiment, and I appreciated it, and I had a good time, and I learned a lot, and I contributed a lot, but it wasn't like what I'm doing now. There's no comparison to what I'm doing now, and there's really no comparison to who I am now. Who I was then, I love that younger person, that version of me, but boy, she was serious. And she just was very insecure in a lot of ways, too afraid to be seen, very uncomfortable being seen, which is, you know, why was I a performer? I don't know, because I was very uncomfortable being seen for who I was. And I think that, you know, having the trumpet between me and the audience helped a lot with that, because I really craved connection. But I was afraid to be seen. So the trumpet was a way of accomplishing that. But I am so much happier and so much more myself and so much more relaxed and yet still more joyful and more, really more ambitious and more anticipating of everything that's coming now in my life than I was then. But it was a good ride. I really loved being a trumpet player. I got a lot out of it. I brought a lot of pleasure to a lot of people, which I'm happy about. So,
yeah. All right. Okay, website link is in the show notes, and all of the links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, I'm truly hoping you have thoughts on today's show. If you're not sure, go listen to some of the videos on Ramona's website. They are food for thought. When you have thoughts, I'm hoping you'll share them. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. What question did I not ask, Ramona? Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. If you've had any thoughts that say it's kind of woo-woo to me, that's great, because I love the definition of woo-woo that I once heard. Anything is possible. In this case, joy, self-love, alignment, those are well worth sharing. My usual request for stars and reviews, we need more boomer women listening to podcasts, and those stars and reviews do help. You can support this podcast by buying me a coffee. That's a pretty cheap option. The link to that is in the show notes and above Ramona's head on her page at our website. I've also registered at Substack. Following there is free. Ramona Gailey, thank you for being my guest today. You radiate calm and joy. They seem to go hand in hand with you. And that's such a great place to start this journey, well, any journey, I suppose. Thank you,
Agnes. I've had a lovely time visiting with you. And thank you for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.